She gently removed the box from the paper bag and set it on a cotton cloth draped over the table. The weight surprised her every time she lifted it. Whatever it had been made to hold must have been heavy or precious. She carefully brushed her fingers over the dirt on the top edge of the lid. It crumbled instead of sticking to her fingers. Hopefully, the dirt crusting the box had preserved the decoration underneath. After shaking out her hands, she picked up the small, soft brush, gently, slowly brushing away the dislodged dirt. All it revealed was time-darkened wood. "Slow and steady, Maggie. That will get the job done." A chill wrapped around her, and she shivered. She made a mental note to check the thermostat, and headed to the back room, where she grabbed a bottle of water out of the small fridge. Back in the main part of the shop, she pulled a short stool up to the table and got to work. 20 minutes later, she was close to revealing what was under the dirt on the end piece. She took a deep breath, then brushed away the final layer of dirt along the bottom edge. When she saw what she had uncovered, she almost dropped the brush. "That's enamel inlay," she whispered. "And the wood, it looks like
rosewood."
The deep male voice froze her hand. Maggie stood and did drop the brush, forgetting what she was going to say. She had been watching the man who stood in the doorway on BBC last night. Good heavens, renowned archaeologist Pembroke Martin was standing in her shop.
"The box is rosewood, and it belongs to me."
His last words snapped her out of the shock at seeing him here, in the flesh. "I'm sorry, Professor Martin, but I just bought this box at auction, which means it belongs to me."
"A yank," he muttered. "It figures."
"Excuse me?" He blinked at her, his gray-blue eyes clear and intense behind his wire-rimmed glasses. Maggie would never admit to him that she had rewound one section of the documentary several times to watch a close-up of him while he talked about something. Too bad he wasn't the same charming man in person. He cleared his throat.
"Did I say that out loud?"
His response surprised her so much she laughed. "Yes, you did."
"Sorry."
He ran one hand through his wavy, dark brown hair, making it even more disheveled than it already was.
"About the Yang comment, and saying it out loud. We nearly met in the lot next to the estate, and I figured it was a foolish yank."
Maggie covered her mouth to stifle a gasp. He had been in the little sports car she'd almost run over, forgetting to orient herself again before she headed toward the road.
"Not that you are foolish."
Maggie lowered her hand, smiling at his horrified glance.
"Lord, I'm going to quit while I'm still only at my ankle."
Smart move. She decided that he wasn't such a beast after all. "Why don't you come all the way inside and tell me why this box is yours?"
"Thank you."
"Maggie." She held out her hand as he approached. "Maggie Mulgrew." He stopped in front of her and flashed a smile that left her a little breathless.
"Are you related to Irene Mulgrew?"
"She was my great aunt." Maggie composed herself and put a little space between them, using the need to take a drink of water as an excuse. "So, if the box belongs to you, how did it end up at an estate auction?"
"My former assistant stole it, along with the jar it contained."
Maggie choked on her water. "Jar?" she whispered.
"It held a rare Sayer and Brown apothecary jar. Ken most likely separated them, hoping to get more money for the sale."
"He would have been disappointed with the profits from the box. I bought it for £10. Professor Martin sighed.
"That doesn't surprise me. I was not able to clean the box before Ken stole them both out from under me."
He lowered a well-used leather satchel to the floor, crossed his arms, and studied her, like she was one of his artifacts. Maggie straightened her shoulders, aware that her wild waves were wilder than usual, even constrained in her usual bun. Barely constrained.
"You knew. When you saw the box, you saw its potential."
"That's what I do. Look for the potential, bring it out, and sell it for a profit." Professor Martin laughed.
"I think I like you, Miss Mulgrew."
"I have the feeling you didn't come here to talk about the box." He ran one hand through his hair and pushed his glasses up. He was obviously stalling while he decided what to say next.
"Tanner gave me your address, and I was hoping you had seen who purchased the jar."
"I did. And I'll tell you. On one condition."